Chapter 17. Biggest day of my life, and all I can think about is how I have to pee. When the complement of full blackguards had joined Tia and the other nunks in their vigils before dawn, the one-handed new blackguard trainer Samite had thoughtfully brought Tia and a few other archers to be cups of kopi, still steaming from the kitchens. Tia had only sipped the stimulant before and hadn't liked the taste, so she never had a full cup. This morning she'd drained it with gusto. Now she had to pee, and she felt jittery. With the burden of Quentin's life and death off her shoulders, she'd then had something quite like the vigil she'd always hoped to have. She'd wept, and then sworn at Orholm for all her problems, then beseeched him for forgiveness, then begged him for guidance, then been at peace, and then wept again. She'd had a sense, for some fragile, tender minutes, that she wasn't alone, that she wasn't forsaken, that she had purpose, that he knew her. He saw her. He cared. He saved. It had been a night overfull. Like my bladder. Orholm, let me not wet my new blacks. 50 blackguards had gathered to stand in rows with her and 5 other nunks on the roof of the prism's tower, saluting the sun as it rose. Commander Fisk turned as soon as the sun had barely cleared the horizon. It was going to be a busy day for all of them, so the ceremony would be abbreviated at best. Not that Tia was complaining.
"Address Tia, Galea's daughter,"
Commander Fisk said, after greeting each of the others. Tia hadn't heard her mother's name since the day she'd been signed over to the Blackguard training. She didn't want to think of herself as that creature's daughter, though slaves were traditionally known by their matronymic.
"The Blackguard is an ancient order, heavy with honour. We were born out of fealty and failure, out of the honour of Lucidonius's 30 mighty men, and the shame of the satrapies failing to protect his widow and our second Prism Caris Shadowblinder. Upon her death, those who remained of the 30 organized this guard to protect the Prism, and in the last extremity, to protect the 7 satrapies from a Prism."
A quiet descended, the full blackguards contemplative, the newest ones confused. Protect the satrapies from the Prism? Then a crack like a musket shot rang out. 50 pairs of hands went to weapons, 50 pairs of eyes were covered with coloured spectacles, but it was only the propped-up replacement door falling to the ground as someone came up to the roof. Caris Guile, Caris Whiteoak, now Caris White, stood in the opening for a moment to let her former brethren relax, then stepped outside. She wore the white dress of her station, but one newly made, cut to her slim, muscular figure. The points of her high collar were sharpened, reminiscent of swords, and all her accents were bright silver, not gold. The dress itself was lean cut, and if Tia didn't miss her guess, infused with Luxin, as were the Blackguard's blacks. As much as a dress could be, it was one in which the former Blackguard could move. It was steel femininity, and Tia immediately recalled that just days ago, when they tried to throw her off the testing platform, this woman had kicked 2 big men to their deaths without hesitation, remorse, or much effort. The Blackguard Caris Whiteoak had been small, fast, and fierce. The only thing small about Caris White was her frame. As the Blackguards saluted her and her attending Blackguards fanned out onto the roof, she said, "If I may, Commander?"
"It's an honour, High Lady," Fisk said. "Please do."
Caris addressed them somberly. "Prisms don't break the halo like the rest of us, but they do go mad after their allotted time. Some of them. Others can't handle what the freeing demands of them. Others, when the end of their term comes, and they know they're going to die, try to escape." Tia had never heard of that. She saw some of the others were rattled by it too. Who could imagine being called upon to kill a Gavin Guile? Then she realized she hadn't heard of it because the Blackguard was that competent. Prisms who shamed themselves by breaking their oaths and trying to flee were always quietly killed. Word never got out. Who could escape the Blackguard? Tia asked, "But how do they know that they're going to die? If Gavin Guile made it to his 3rd term, how would another Prism not know if they might not have a 2nd or a 3rd term themselves? Or is that it? They don't know, so they flee. They know. Somehow they know."
But Caris looked troubled, as if there were parts of this she didn't understand either.
Orholm have mercy. Had that been in the papers Tia had helped steal?
Do we know too? Another asked. Is there some warning?
Commander Fisk said,
The colours and the Magisterium will tell you when it's likely. But it's always possible. None of the Blackguard now serving have ever had to hunt a prism, and we pray we never do. But ours is the Long Watch. Do you have any other questions before we continue?
Tyr shook her head.
Carys said, Your duty is hard, but this I promise you. You shan't be asked to betray your honour.
It was an answer to the question Tyr couldn't ask with all the others there. Will my attempted infiltration of the Order of the Broken Eye compromise my oaths? But it wasn't an exact answer, was it? I won't have to betray my honour, but I may have to break, or appear to break, my oaths. Would Carys thread so narrow a needle's eye with her words? Carys Whiteoak wouldn't have. Would Carys White? Why had Carys come up here? To bond the Blackguards further to her, to wish a former pupil well, or to make sure that Tyr did take the oaths? All of the above, no doubt. We are warriors, and this is our lot.
Commander, Carys said, may I continue with you?
We will be honoured, High Lady. Though one may be called to other duties, one never ceases being a Blackguard, he said,
and then he turned to Tyr and the others.
The Blackguard forms an unbroken chain, extending back to the time of Lucidonius himself. At induction, we recite the stories of our forebears to remind us who we have been, who we are, and to what we should aspire. At the end, we each name a Blackguard who inspires us, a patron whose qualities will help us become the best Blackguard we can be. High Lady White, will you start for us?
I remember Carys Shadowblinder, Lucidonius's wife and widow, and a prism. Though our order wasn't established until after her death, it was built on the foundation she laid. Dancer, poet, theatre mama, and when times demanded it, finally a warrior drafter of unmatched ferocity. She swore an oath to marry no man who couldn't beat her in will, wit, and weapons. Lucidonius failed 12 times, on 12 successive months, until she admitted he at least equaled her in will. He cheated at the contest of wits, drugging her beforehand, which she agreed showed a wit of his own. And last, with weapons, she lost, though some argue that was intentional. Carys Shadowblinder would later save Lucidonius's life 3 times and fail on the 4th. Carys is precious to me because the heart of the Blackguard is love. Love for 7 satrapies, love for this brotherhood, and in the best of times, love for the leader we protect. Carys Shadowblinder reminds me that in this mortal realm, even if we love perfectly, we may fail still.
The White stepped back. A tall, shaven-headed Blackguard named Asif stepped forward.
I remember Finer. He was a Blackguard during the time of Prism's Leonidas Atropos and Fiona Rathkor. He struck down the Bandit King in the Battle of Ghost Flats. Handsome, funny, and loved by everyone, it was widely expected that he would one day be the commander of the Blackguard. Instead, he went white and fled. He killed 4 of his brothers before he could be put down. Finer reminds me of the importance of duty, and that all fame and renown count for nothing if we don't uphold our oaths.
His cousin, Alif, stepped forward next. I remember Commander Ayrad, who sat quiet judging until the time came to act. In his testing fights he placed each time last, 49th at the end of the 1st week, then 35th at the end of the 2nd, then 28th, then 14th, and on the last week he fought from place 14 to 13, 13 to 12, 12 to 11, then to 10, to 9, to 8, to 7, to 6, to 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Never in our history has man or woman fought so many times or won so authoritatively. Because of his intelligence, Ayrad didn't fight harder. He isolated the weakness of each opponent and took him or her out efficiently. Later in life, that intelligence would raise him to commander of this hallowed body, and it would save the lives of 4 prisms. And yet, Alif said, yet Commander Ayrad himself would fall to poison. The culprit was never found. Even Ayrad, with all his intellect, had blind spots, as do we all. I learn from him that we can never, never be off our guard.
He took a step back. Tlatig, an archer, stepped forward. She was not a handsome person, her mouth turned down, eyes squinted, skin blemished, body with fewer curves than the 7 towers,
Only when she picked up a bow did a grace come upon her. She was then a wonder as is a swallow in flight. Surreal, prescient, a walking miracle with a bow. On the training field, Tlatig wore a tiny chemise tied tight to show off the knotted muscles of her shoulders and the V of her back. I remember Commander Dauntless. She gave up her noble connections and her family's aspirations in order to serve the Seven Satrapies. She had two dreams, to be a blackguard and to be a mother, and she sacrificed the latter to be the former. When she retired after a long and storied career, whose details I would tell you had not Commander Fisk asked us to be brief today, she tried to have a family, and that late in life she could not. She reminds me of the heavy price of duty, and that our forebears paid it and lived in honour. Commander Dauntless lived in duty and died with honour, though it cost her grievously. I remember her, and strive to meet her standard. Tyr looked at Tlatig with new eyes. Tlatig wanted a family? That was her greatest longing, and the price she was willing to pay for this family? Tlatig had never seemed like the mothering type. On the other hand, from Tlatig's slightly embarrassed look, Tyr could tell that she felt exposed from having shared so much, but that she shared anyway, while sharing made her feel so awkward, told Tyr that she was being given something precious. Another archer, Piper, stepped forward. She wore her hair pulled into a knot at the back of her head and had the straining halos and lined face of a woman on her last year before freeing.
I remember Massenson and Ikkin and Gwafa and Menad. Massenson defeated 3 great horned iron bulls on the Melos Plain in the Jadmar Rebellion. Ikkin Dancing Spear killed the Jadmar's warchief and giant Amazul. Gwafa demolished the Necril, the will-casting coven that laid siege to Agbalu. Menad gave his life saving the prison in Pericol when he was there to sign the Elishan papers. All these heroes were one man. Massenson took a new name every time he performed another act that would make any other man a legend. Where others would take a name that celebrated their heroic act to remind people of it forever, Massenson did the opposite. He took a new, plainer name each time and refused to become even a watch captain. He believed that all glory should be reflected to Orholm, and that his own fame should be shared with his companions and his prism. He was simply a blackguard, and any blackguard was his equal. Massenson reminds me that we wear black that we may serve in obscurity. We wear black that the light may shine the brighter. Massenson reminds me of duty with excellence.
For some reason, it was only as Piper spoke that Tyr finally stopped thinking about her bladder and was pulled into the words. These were some of the greatest heroes in history. These were people who had altered the course of satrapies, crushed kingdoms, saved prisms and colours, and fought monsters out of legends. This was the company she was being invited into, as an equal. This was what she'd wanted since she could remember. All the misgivings and questions about herself faded. They would call her a slave, but she is not a slave who chooses to serve. As she thought, heart swelling, a tear cold in the wind on her cheeks, the normally quiet Nera had stepped forward. She smiled shyly.
I remember Thea Tafsut. She served all her days quietly and was to retire at Sunday on her 40th year. She sought and received permission to become pregnant as there was little light left for her. Pregnant on the day before Sunday, she hurled herself at a wight attempting to murder her prism. She was killed, and she did not kill the wight in turn, but she slowed it enough that others did. Others in those circumstances would have hesitated, saved themselves, saved their baby. She did not. She reminds me that even those who are not great themselves can, through great sacrifice, change history.
And that was the cost, to join this company. What made them fearsome was the totality of their dedication, their readiness to pay all one could pay. But in return, they bought a life that mattered. Even a slave girl from the far reaches of the Empire could matter. Yes, her soul breathed. Yes. It was not that these heroes hadn't failed. It was that they had, all of them sooner or later, in public or private. They were heroes despite their failures, for they had striven with their whole hearts toward the light. The blackguard was strong because it didn't feel threatened by those failures. This was a company that would live in the light. And by some grace, Tyr didn't think how she would be a spy. She soaked up the light of the dawn and the light of clear purpose and bedrock devotion. She only wished Kip and the rest of the squad could share this with her. Gavin Grayling had stepped forward to be the seventh and final speaker. "I remember Gavin Gyle."
"Gavin Gyle was never a blackguard," Fisk snapped. "Great though he was. Is, High Lady, my apologies. Pick another, Grayling."
"I beg to differ, Commander," Gavin Grayling said. "Respectfully, just before the Battle of Rue, when he sank the great ship Gargantua, Gavin Gyle was given a blackguard name by Commander Ironfist himself. Among us, Gavin is known as Promarchos."
"Neither you nor even Commander Ironfist had the authority to name a Promarchos," Fisk said. "And though our esteemed Emperor held that position, he surrendered it back to the Spectrum many years ago. You're embarrassing—"
"Your pardon, sir. But it was not meant as a title, but instead as a blackguard name that, in accordance with our best traditions, reflects the essence of the man. Earned hard and given true, it is not our way to strip a blackguard, even an honorary one, of his name, if he hasn't forfeited the right to it by acting dishonorably. Are you suggesting Gavin Gyle acted dishonorably?"
Gavin Grayling was pushing it. But he did so with such glee it was hard to be mad at him.
"Watch your tongue, son."
Even for Commander Fisk, apparently.
"Yes, sir."
Commander Fisk hesitated, looked around and pursed his lips.
"No one speaks of this. This circle is closed," he barked. "Go."
With no small amount of swagger, Gavin Grayling said, "I remember Gavin fucking Gyle, who won the False Prism's war, who outwitted the Thorn conspirators and ended the Redcliffe Uprising. Gavin Gyle, who brought low pirate kings and bandit lords, who ended the blood wars with his wits and one deadly wave of his hand, who brought justice to the seven satrapies. Gavin Gyle, who hunted whites and criminals, who built Brightwater Wall in less than a week, who aborted the births of gods, destroyed at least two Bane, and killed a god full-fledged at Ruick Head. Gavin Gyle, who faced a sea demon and lived, saving all the people of Garriston and the Blackguard too. Gavin Gyle, who sank Pash Vecchio's great ship Gargantua with a rat. Gavin Gyle, who armed us for war and gave the Blackguard the seas entire with our sea chariots and hull wreckers. Gavin Gyle, heart of our heart, our Promarchos, the one who goes before us in war, who came and conquered and will come again." The Blackguards couldn't help it. They cheered. They'd already been out looking for him on the skimmers, Tyr had heard. Sometimes on duty, sometimes off. And they would never give up. "For such a man, I would die twice," Gavin Grayling said. "Hear, hear," a number of voices called out. But Tyr was looking at Karis. Her head was bowed, and Tyr saw her swallow once, hard. But when Karis opened her eyes, her face was clear, with no hint of crying there. She nodded regally to the blackguards.
"Thank you," Karis said.
Commander Fisk said, brusquely,
"We've all got duties awaiting us this day, Nunx. We are a storied company, but we are also slaves, Nunx, though some of us are slaves with ears unshorn. We serve a term almost like indentured servants, but our term may be extended at will by our commander, and our eventual retirement may be requested, but granting that is the commander's decision alone. Even if you save the money to buy out your papers, your commander need not accept them. We are honoured slaves, but slaves. For warrior drafters as we all are, there is no higher calling, no greater service, no possibility to rise higher than this shining company. But our lives are short and hard and lived at the direction of others. Tyr, having taken vigil to reflect on your life and this calling, have you selected a patron to whose example you would aspire?"
"Yes," Tyr said. "I choose Commander Ironfist, who alone silenced the artillery at the Battle of Garriston, saving countless lives, who led this company with honour and bravery, and in the end was expelled for no good reason whatsoever. Ironfist reminds me that we joined the Blackguard to serve, not for our own gain. He reminds me to be as vigilant of those who wield orders as those who wield swords."
There was some quiet muttering in response to that. Tyr thought it was in agreement. No one liked how Ironfist had been discarded and had then disappeared, though that was surely the only safe thing for him to do. But frankly, Tyr didn't care what they thought of her choice. After a moment, Commander Fisk nodded letting it go.
"Well then, if you will bind yourself and your honour to this lauded company, repeat after me."
Antia followed him, echoing phrase for phrase.
"I address Jergalea's daughter."
"I address Jergalea's daughter."
"Do swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to High Lady Caris White and her successors according to the law."
"Do swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to High Lady Caris White." Terror, shambles, Tyr forgot the words. But Fisk prompted her gently.
"And her successors according to the law."
"And her successors according to the law." Phew.
"I will protect the prison with my life and in the last extremity."
"I will protect the prison with my life and in the last extremity."
"I will protect the seven satrapies from him or his successors."
"I will protect the seven satrapies from him or his successors."
"So help me."
He hesitated to give proper reverence.
"God."
"So help me, God." Then, as if Tyr's life hadn't just changed forever, Commander Fisk continued on down the line.